You're damn right, wise ass. The heat is on. It's on the street, it's inside your head, and it's on every beat. It's time for a road trip. Let's all hop in our crappy blue Nova and drive halfway across the country. Don't be stupid and forget to pack the Lucky Strikes or the king-size Kents. Maybe we'll stop for a late supper and get a nice glass of wine, maybe a cocktail or an espresso, but don't forget the lemon twist. If you're lucky, we may just see a nice pair of Beverly Hills boobs on this all-new episode. Hello and welcome to Totally 80s and 90s Recall. This is a podcast where we'll take a look at everything the radical decades of the 80s and 90s had to offer, from music and movies to television and pop culture. If you're new to the show, be excited that you found us, because you're about to have an awesome time. And for all of our returning listeners and subscribers, it's great to have you back. I am one of your hosts, Rob, joined by our good friend, Ahmed, Ocknell, Ockwell. Nope, it's our favorite resident movie hound, Kurt.
Ooh, yep, that's me.
That's him.
All righty.
Late on the old movie.
Give him a movie. All right, that's fine. Oh, there it is. Yay, I got applause.
You know what? The movie hound may not have a button today.
It does not.
That's all right.
We've lost our movie hound
sound. That's right.
I've got different.
We gave it to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
There it is.
He found it.
Kip helped me find it.
He told me he knew where all the buttons was today.
Hold on a sec. We're terrible. Rewind. Say it again. Our good friend. Do it again.
Oh, you want me to do it again?
Yeah.
Okay. I am one of your hosts, Rob, joined by our good friend, Ahmed. Ocknell? Ockwell? Nope. It's our favorite resident movie hound, Kurt. There we go. All right.
Perfect. Excellent job. All right. Hello, Rob.
Wow. We are all over the place today.
No, I have it under control. No,
okay, we have it under control.
All right. Well, hello, Rob. How are you today? Are you feeling refreshed, energized?
I am.
Okay. I'm just making sure, because I was listening last week.
Oh,
and towards the end, you were expressing how you were a little tired.
I'm tired.
I just want to make sure your gas tanks are full.
I'm good.
You're ready to go for this full episode. Yep. We don't want you to sputter along like what you said, the crappy blue Chevy Nova. Yeah. We don't want you to become that.
He always gives 110%.
That's right. Yeah. He does.
For the first 50.
Yes.
Percent.
You hit 51 minutes and 20 seconds before you got tired last time.
That's right.
Let's see if you can go a little longer.
I'm building my stamina.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
51 minutes in front of anything you're doing is good.
That's right.
That seems long.
That does seem long.
And if it feels long,
there you go.
You're good.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I've been asked to read. Oh, we did get another letter, except this time it was an electronic letter. Oh. I believe the kids now call them emails.
Oh.
So we got an email, and this one's from Mitch in New York City.
Oh, boy.
And it says, "Dear Hound and Movie Boys, I've been doing a lot of soul searching recently, and I need a little help from you. My friends and I usually take a trip every year, and coming home from our most recent trip, where we ran with the bulls in Pamplona, Spain, and of course, I was the one who got gored by the bull right in the rump. On the flight home from this, while sitting on a large lump of gauze, I realized my friends and I only do these trips every year, just to escape our boring lives.
Oh.
I seem to have lost my smile, and I no longer enjoy my radio advertising job. My buddy Phil is trapped in a loveless marriage to his wife Arlene, while also managing his father-in-law's supermarket and having an affair with a 20-year-old employee. My other friend Ed, who is the instigator behind most of these crazy trips, recently married a much younger woman, but still refuses to settle down and become a family man. So you could say, just like you boys, we're having a midlife crisis, except they didn't start a podcast.
That's the best way to take care of that
crisis. That's right. So he says last week was his 39th birthday, and during his party, his friends surprised him with another trip. This one is where they all go on a cattle drive from New Mexico to Colorado. He wants to know, should I go on this trip? And if so, what should I expect to do? And do you have any advice for me? So, well, Mitch, the Recall crew think the trip would be a good idea for you and your friends.
Uh-huh.
We have come up with some advice and things you can expect to learn or see on your trip. So while on your trip, the first thing we suggest for you to do is mosey at least once. Even if you've ever sashayed, you got to mosey. Always pre-grind your coffee before going on the trip because cows really hate the sound of the coffee grinder. You could start a stampede. I learned that one the hard way. On the trip, you can be expected to be asked by the scary, gruff boss, who will probably be named something like Curly, to go out searching for cows that have separated from the herd. You want to do that because you will learn good stuff about how to deliver a baby cow.
You might.
And you will want to name that cow Norman, of course. You will also have a deep philosophical conversation about the secret to life, and you will find out that it's one thing, not the boss's finger, but it's just something you need to figure out for yourself.
Okay.
You can expect the gruff old trail boss to, of course, die of a heart attack after years of smoking and eating nothing but red meat. But don't be afraid. The ranch hands that take over will, of course, be heavy drinkers. The camp cook will also get drunk and drive the camp wagon off a cliff. But don't worry about digging holes to bury the dead horses because the impact will drive them mostly into the ground.
Mostly dead.
Mostly dead. You will learn the secret of the best ice cream flavor to pair with sauteed sea bass. It's, of course, rum raisin.
Okay.
The ranch hands will later get drunk one night because they're heavy drinkers, and they will start a fight with the whole group. But this will be a great time for your buddy Phil to come out of his shell and take over the situation by threatening the ranch hands with one of their guns, thus impressing the beautiful single lady that is also on the trip. The ranch hands, of course, will leave you just in the lurch all by yourselves. So here is where you, Mitch, will take charge of finishing this cattle drive with your friends. Because remember, there's nothing like bringing in a herd. When you bring in the herd, though, remember to sing the theme song from Bonanza.
Nice.
Mitch, Kip, and the boys also want you to know, when you do return home from this adventure, we promise that you will found your smile. Phil will have found his confidence, and Ed will be ready to settle down. Plus, the family will have a new pet cow to love.
There you go.
That, so one that, might say that was a slick intro.
Look how good he's getting.
Hey. Awesome job.
One might say that.
That's a slick intro.
All right. Well, we are glad to have you here again today, Kurt. And we can't forget the man who, in his free time, enjoys traveling to small towns across the United States, challenging strict anti-dancing and rock music ordinances, playing a good game of chicken on tractors, and asking the hard-hitting questions like, where's the beef? And what does it sound like when doves cry? It's the voice and our good friend, Dave.
Ooh, Dave. That was a good intro.
You like that?
I never get anything like that.
I know. That was spelled out well. Well, hello to the two of you.
Hello. You can give yourself an applause if you really want to.
I know.
You get enough of it in your life?
That's right.
Oh, okay.
It is great that we brought the hound back into the studio, as Rob said, but I will say it's a little weird today because I don't run the flow of the show. Usually I'm the lead host here.
We've kind of changed roles today.
But by the way, if you're tuning in for the first time, the beginning was a little discombobulated.
That's okay.
It usually runs a little smoother, but it's Rob's second time doing this, so we give him a pass.
That's all right.
But I'm going to go full Robster today. I'm going to sit here with Kip's guidance. Often have a somewhat annoyed look on my face and run the board and see
and
how
not the, follow any of the rules
and see how the other half lives. That's what I'm going to do today, Rob.
All right.
But thanks for having me.
Yeah. I like your shirt today.
You got a custom shirt? Got a custom shirt from one of our past episodes. Our speed episode, for anyone who's familiar. We kind of coined a little phrase about, I should have stayed in Aspen with our friend Harry.
That's right.
So I put Harry on my chest.
Yeah.
And I should have stayed in Aspen.
He's got Harry chest.
So this is a prime t-shirt right here.
Well, Dave, why don't you tell us what topic we are covering today?
Well, gentlemen, we are going back 40 years to a fantastic year in cinema, 1984, and looking at one of the best movies, not only of that year, but the entire decade, the Eddie Murphy comedy / action classic, Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, 40 years.
40 years.
40.
That's nuts.
Does that make you feel good?
I don't know.
You don't know.
40 years.
Yes.
Crazy.
Crazy.
Well, before we get into the deep conversation about Axel Foley and all of his hijinks,
yes.
Let's roll the original theatrical trailer.
A Eddie Murphy is a Detroit cop on vacation in Beverly Hills.
I just got off the phone with an Inspector Todd in Detroit. He says if you're out here investigating the Tandino murder, you needn't bother coming back.
I don't want to take it anymore.
For a man who claims to be on vacation, you look a lot like you're on a stakeout.
Stakeout? No. I'm picnicking. This is like a picnic area. I have to ask you some questions about Michael Tandino.
I never been to a cell that had a phone in it.
Can I stay for a while? Because I ordered some pizza.
We have six witnesses that say you broke in and started tearing up the place, then jumped out the window.
May I help you?
Yeah. I'm looking for Victor Meadman.
I have nothing to say to you.
How you doing? You guys don't know nothing about nothing, do you? You just got your badges and your guns and you're on the job, right? Make sure we get the right drinks, because if I drink club soda, I'll throw up.
You know, this is the cleanest and nicest police car I've ever been in my life. Stays nice in my apartment.
Mrs. Mitch, you are the pride of your department in Detroit.
Seems painfully obvious you haven't the slightest idea who you're dealing with.
I don't know what y'all think I am, tipping for some kind of fool. Hurry up, quicker!
Crawl back to your little stone in Detroit before you get squashed.
Eddie Murphy, Beverly Hills Cop.
It was a classic 80s trailer.
Yeah. I know. I really like it.
You like it?
Got a little violent there at the end.
With the guns.
Yeah. But I like the trailer guy's voice.
You always love the voice.
I do. I wish if I could have gone back and be a little kid and say, that's a job I want.
The guy that want to be the trailer voice.
Eddie Murphy is Beverly Hills Cop. You know, just to deliver that.
That wasn't even close. I was going to say, do you have like tape around your glasses as you're doing that?
It's got to be
coming this summer.
It's got to be, it's got to be a little nasally.
Oh my God. Here it comes. Wow. Or Lousers, man.
If they did it a little more upbeat, it'd be like, this summer, Eddie Murphy's got a big problem.
oh, crap. there it is. So what do you remember about this movie?
Go ahead.
Well, this movie came out in 84.
Yeah.
So I was four.
You were four.
I was four.
Yeah.
So, I think the proper way to pronounce that is faux.
Faux.
Quattro.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Quattro.
Yes.
But so I probably did not see this one until probably the second one coming out in 87. Probably did like a double, but I do remember, I don't know if I sat down and watched it, but I do remember like dad, older sisters, mom watching it and me just watching a little bits at a time. So
I was seven.
I was, seven or eight.
So eight. Yeah. So
seven or eight.
I don't remember. I know we've talked about this was, I remember watching this at the babysitter.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's where you get the good movies. Yeah. I saw this.
I don't know about the
on the HBO. So I got to see it on HBO over at a friend's house. Then it was on our HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to see it lots of times because I loved it. Yeah. And then they started playing it on like the TBS and that, but you get the edited version.
Yeah. Not as good.
Not as good, but still funny. Mm. I just remember thinking it was hilarious.
Yeah.
So as a youngster running around, I thought it was funny.
A little lad.
Running around going, hey, man.
I ain't going to fall for no banana tailpipe.
Let's see. So if you think about Eddie Murphy's discography.
Ooh, good
word. Filmography.
Filmography.
Is this your favorite Eddie Murphy movie?
It is definitely up there. I'm thinking, I was going kind of trading places, Coming to America, or this one. Those are kind of all up there in the running. Yeah. But I would say this one's probably, it's
for me,
it's
this is it. This is my first. And then Coming to America is 1B. But Beverly Hills Cop is my, I love this movie.
I kind of think this is the Eddie Murphy
movie. Coming to America is really good.
Man, that's true.
But this is, I don't know, this is like quintessential Eddie Murphy right here.
His later stuff, like Bowfinger. I thought that was funny.
That was good.
That was funny.
Boomerang's really good. We've talked about
that. You really like that
one. Dude, I was watching it last night, as a matter of fact.
You know you love Norbit.
And the wife was commenting on how...
Hercules!
Dr. Doolittle.
That's Doolittle.
Oh, Daddy Daycare is real good.
Get in there with what about the Haunted Mansion?
Haunted Mansion was a good one. You know, he got nominated for an Oscar for Dreamgirls.
He did.
Oh, he did.
The musical.
I did not know that.
He played like a James Brown.
Have you caught the most recent Eddie Murphy Netflix? I haven't watched it.
Well, I didn't watch a Netflix. I watched an Amazon special over Christmas, and it was a Christmas Eddie Murphy special.
Yeah, but aren't they doing the new Eddie Murphy?
That
comes out in July 3rd.
Hasn't come out yet.
Comes out July 3rd.
Okay, that's why.
But that Christmas one on Amazon, not so great.
It's not good.
It wasn't that
great. I haven't heard good things.
I didn't mind it. I watched it twice. Okay.
Wow.
I got a lot of extra time on my hands during Christmas break.
Oh, there it is.
Perfect time. Good work.
Wow. Right. Well, it's time.
It's time.
Is it?
Yep. It's time to get ourselves a new attitude and put on our best dancing shoes and do the Neutron dance. And no, this is not your locker as we unpack the 1984 comedy classic, Beverly Hills Cop.
That song will always remind me on Revenge of the Nerds when they do their the electric guy at the end. It's a very similar song. I have not researched that, but I would bet that maybe that guy had something to do with that too, because it's so close.
This morning I was walking around the office and I was whistling that song.
Yeah,
and
it's infectious.
My counselor goes, Are you whistling Axel F?
Yes.
I went, yes.
I am excited that your counselor knew that.
Yeah, he knew that. He's a young kid, too. He's like 22, 23, so he knew it.
He had good parents.
Well, you mentioned earlier that we've kind of swapped roles.
We have.
And you were kind of excited to see how this goes, right?
It's going so far.
So we've hit our first snag.
Oh, okay.
All right. So I'm reading my notes here.
Yes.
I didn't change them.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just going to read what I have.
Oh, all right.
It says, remind our listeners to share and subscribe.
Yes.
You can involve Kurt and I if you'd like.
There you go.
So yes. I would like all of you out there to share and subscribe to our show. And and then Kurt and Dave, I'd like to include you.
Oh, okay. I would also like everyone to subscribe and share.
Yeah. How might one do that?
They could
Let's
do it.
Let's say I were to stumble upon your
podcast.
Yes. How might I share?
Well, we're on any of the podcast outlets. I assume if you've stumbled upon us,
you found Apple, somehow.
You found Spotify, you found Amazon, whatever it is, iHeart, whatever it is you're using.
Yeah.
And on all of those, when you get our little episode, there'll be a little weird triangly thing with circles on it. You can hit that. It'll say share. And then all you got to do is put in a little who your friend is. It'll go right to them.
If you have friends.
Yes. If you have friends. Even if you don't have friends, just send it to people. Just find, you know, there's no phone books anymore.
No.
But you can go online and find people. Just find people, send it to them.
right.
Any people you find. Right.
You
could, can send to your enemies. We're just as happy with your enemies as your friends.
You could potentially just bring somebody to the device.
You could just bring it to the device and go here. You could listen do the old school here. You take one AirPod, I'll take the other, and we can sit here and listen to this side by side, right?
There we go.
So, reason that they want to subscribe and share with a friend is they don't want to miss any of our episodes.
Right.
You know,
we have a back catalog of really entertaining stuff.
It's critical that you find us each week.
That's right. So every Tuesday.
There you go.
Here we go. That was very well done.
You did a great job.
Good
job.
There we go. Yeah. Well, so before we begin reliving this week's awesome movie, we'd like to give you, the listeners, the important info about this movie. And there's only one person we know with a nose for that type of stuff, and that's the movie hound himself.
All righty. Well, so thank you very much. It's my nose.
It's my nose.
It's a little crooked. I was kicked in a soccer game one time. It's fine.
For real?
For real.
I didn't know that.
I did.
Oh.
I got ushered off the field that day.
I didn't want to play the hound sound before the nose thing, so I was letting you finish.
Okay. That's nice of you.
I knew it was important.
I just like everyone to know a little bit about my life sometimes.
Right. That's okay. Right. That's all
right. So like David, or I can't remember who said it. Was that you, Rob?
I don't know. We're all turning around today.
It's okay. That's right. This year, like it was already said, is the 40th anniversary of the movie Beverly Hills Cop, which was originally released December 5th, 1984. The movie was a box office smash by a lot, earning well over $315 million worldwide on a budget of just $13 million. I've been drinking.
It's a hard one.
It is. Beverly Hills Cop was originally titled Beverly Drive in the original screenplay. The screenplay was written by Daniel Petri Jr. and the story was by Danilo Bach and Daniel Petri Jr. The movie stars Eddie Murphy, Judge Reinhold. Oh, I am having trouble.
George and Judge.
That's right. John Ashton, Steve Berkoff, Paul Reiser, Ronnie Cox, Lisa Eilbacher, and Bronson Pinchot. Beverly Hills Cop on Rotten Tomatoes has a certified fresh critic score of 83% and an almost identical audience score of 82%.
Ooh.
The soundtrack for the movie was released on MCA Records and won the Academy Award for Best Score Soundtrack, or Grammy Award. Sorry, I said Academy Award, didn't I?
That's okay.
Grammy Award for the Best Score Soundtrack for Visual Media in 1986. It featured three top 10 singles on the Billboard Hot 100, the instrumental title tune Axel F that we just heard, composed and performed by Harold Faltermeyer.
I like him.
The Glenn Frey song, The Heat Is On, and the Neutron
Fry.
Whatever. This is the worst I've ever been. Yes. This is good.
I've thrown you all for a loop today.
That's okay. True.
My goodness.
But this is my usual part, so this I've got no excuse for this one.
What's going on here today? You got marble mouth.
So we got the Glenn Frey song, The Heat Is On, and Neutron Dance performed by the Pointer Sisters. The soundtrack also had two Patti LaBelle hits, New Attitude and Stir It Up.
Oh, it's a lot.
That was a lot. Yeah. Now, Dave, as Rob snuggles up in his $95 Beverly Palm robe, because money is no object on show, can you please tell us all about the plot of this great movie?
Well, before I do that, Rob himself was so impressed with the Rotten Tomatoes, I physically watched him write the numbers down
on his
notes as if he couldn't find it anywhere else.
83, 82.
It's not accessible.
He needs to write it down. He doesn't know the Google.
Thing. Yeah. So.
All right.
Well, at least I'm glad I got something out of my mouth for him to write down.
We're not going to capitalize on that. So pass it over to me for the plot. And this is a little segment that Rob usually does, but we call it Back of the Box.
Back of the box, back of the box. Box, 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 back of the box.
It's not as easy to find the back of a VHS thing. So Rob makes it look real easy each week. I will give him credit for that, folks. So, but I did find it. Took a little research. So Back of the Box says, Eddie Murphy's hilarious portrayal of Detective Axel Foley has propelled Beverly Hills Cop into the ranks of the top 10 box office hits in history. Foley is a brash, street smart Detroit detective. You threw it on me.
I got you too.
A Detroit detective who follows the trail of a friend's murder to the posh surroundings of Beverly Hills. And before Axel gets his man, he gets up to his next in an international smugglers and drug peddlers. It's a fast speed adventure that proves the difference between a really good comedy and a great comedy is Eddie Murphy. 1984 Paramount Pictures Corp. All rights reserved.
How many minutes?
I was going to say you didn't do the minutes.
I didn't do the minutes.
No, that's okay.
But I believe like 147 when we watched it was like, 140, 138, something like that. So,
well, if you're new to this show, the three of us will talk a little bit about the movie before jumping into some categories where we'll share our favorite and maybe not so favorite moments from Beverly Hills Cop. So, dang it. Well, let's talk about casting real quick.
Okay. Casting. What would you like to talk about?
Well, who was this show originally built for?
It was originally built, I found, was Mickey Rourke.
Oh, yeah.
So they had him signed. They had him to a contract and everything. But because it was taking so long for everything to get developed and started, he's like, I'm out. I got to go do the Pope of Greenwich Village.
See, I read that differently. I read that it was for Stallone.
That's what I read.
And then Mickey Rourke, after Stallone wouldn't do it. I think the stories are a little, I know I saw that part too. Rourke was signed at one point.
Yeah.
Then Rourke went away. Sylvester Stallone was signed at one point. And I even saw up until 2 weeks before filming, Stallone was signed. Mm-hmm. And the reason that he left the set is because they had an argument about the type of orange juice that was going to be in his trailer.
I read that too.
So
Stallone's like, I can't drink this Minute Maid crap.
Dang it.
You knew it had to come. Okay, can you?
Hey, if you give me Stallone, I got to give it a little. Hey, you do a good Stallone. No, so I should give. I should yield to you.
This is a different movie. Was still
oh my god! It
I like
make
how
sense.
I like how he had changed the script and he wanted it to be Axel Cobretti before he made Cobra.
He said the script was rejected. Cobra. His script also was rejected, and then he just recycled it into Cobretti.
Yeah.
So a lot of what he rewrote became Cobra.
Yeah.
I'm the disease. Or I'm the cure. Or whatever it is, right?
I also saw they talked to Al Pacino, James Caan were also in it. Those would have been good, right?
Yeah.
I think Caan would have been a little too aggressive.
I don't know. None of them are funny.
They also offered
though.
It to Harrison Ford.
I did. And he turned it down. None of them are funny.
Well, the movie wasn't supposed to be funny at first. It was supposed to be more of a serious crime drama. But once Eddie came on, that's when they shifted it.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of the movies, made something Eddie else. Being Eddie.
Yeah.
And Eddie chose this movie over Ghostbusters.
I read that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he chose to do this instead of Ghostbusters because Dan Aykroyd really wanted him for Ghostbusters.
Yeah. I read Jeff Bridges, James Caan, Billy Crystal, Robert De Niro.
Billy Crystal wouldn't even make sense.
Yeah. Harrison Ford, Richard Gere, Mel Gibson, Gregory Hines, Michael Keaton, Nick Nolte, Al Pacino, Richard Pryor, Dennis Quaid, Kurt Russell.
So everyone. Just say
Schwarzenegger,
everyone.
Travolta.
Everybody that was an actor in 84.
Robin Williams and Bruce
Schwarzenegger?
Willis.
Did you say Schwarzenegger?
It was in the notes. It was on IMDb.
Have him laugh instead.
The banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah, no. Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah,
he seems like a Detroit cop. An inner city Detroit cop.
What are you talking about? I got thrown out of the window. It's not my fault.
Let's see. What else about the movie you remember?
Interesting facts about the movie. Yeah. So
I like when they were trying to figure out Rosewood and Taggart, the actors for that one. They were teaming up all the finalists for it.
I read this.
And they did. He goes, okay, you're a middle-aged couple. And Reinhold automatically picked up a nearby magazine and went into the improvisation of the 5 pounds of red meat in his bowels.
I like that.
And that's what got him the movie. And they did it almost verbatim in the movie.
I love Rosewood and Taggart. So it's great. I'm so happy that they're there. I saw this was the highest grossing film in the U.S. and Canada in 1984. However, since 84, Ghostbusters has overtaken it all time with a re-release that they had in 1985. Mm-hmm. But in 84 alone, it beat out Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, The Karate Kid, Gremlins, Police Academy, and Footloose. And it was the first time in 5 years the top grossing movie did not involve Steven Spielberg or George Lucas.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one.
I read this is the first of 7 Eddie Murphy movies in a row.
And Kurt's going to like this.
To open up at number one.
Yeah. So this was one. You know what was this? What was after this one that opened at number one?
Huh.
The Golden Child. Which I watched with Kurt for my first time ever a couple weeks ago.
He didn't like it.
Did you like it?
Oh, it was terrible.
You didn't like it?
He doesn't like it. I don't know why. I love it.
But the next one was Beverly Hills Cop 2. Then you had Eddie Murphy Raw, his stand-up. Coming to America. Harlem Nights. And another 48 Hours. Then he had Beverly Hills Cop 3, which didn't do well. But Boomerang then, following year, came in at 3rd. The Distinguished Gentleman was 4th. Beverly Hills Cop 3 did premiere at 2 somehow. Vampire in Brooklyn, a Kurt favorite, at 3.
I've never seen
it. And The Nutty Professor hit number 1 again in 1996.
What's The Distinguished Gentleman? I don't know that
it's
one.
I've only seen it once.
I don't know that one.
Early 90s film. Okay. Not so hot.
I read that Murphy, the guy that played Taggart and then Reinhold, that they improvised most of their lines.
And they did a great job.
This film holds the record for selling the most rented title on Betamax.
That before it became a useless thing. It was number one.
What was that? The big VHS?
No, those were tiny.
Smaller ones.
Smaller?
Yeah. You had to put the Betamax into a little VHS thing. Extra one. And then
did you ever have that? Did you have a Betamax?
My grandmother had one of those.
All right.
So I saw that after Beverly Hills Cop, the director, Martin Brest, directed Midnight Run and Scent of a Woman. He directed those, which were really good.
I'll take a flamethrower to this.
But then he fell off a little bit because the next two movies directed were Meet Joe Black and G. Lee. So he didn't follow that up as well as you thought he would.
I like I like how Martin Brest got fired off of War Games.
Yeah.
Before this one, then they had to. He was because he thought he was hot. Hot shit.
Uh-huh.
And ooh, yeah, ooh, sorry.
Hot wow. Mike. Hot Mike. Hot Mike.
Said hot shit. Shit.
Well, this
time
is.
Out.
No, this is Beverly Hills Cop. There will be some F-bombs coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I heard he got fired and then they Jerry Bruckheimer wanted him so bad that they just kept calling him over and over and over again before he finally did it.
Spoke about War Games. So the set.
Would you like to play
the game? Set. You know how the Beverly Hills, when they walk into the cop station, that's the War Games set. Oh. They wanted to look futuristic because the Detroit station looks so crappy.
Yeah.
They wanted that one to look futuristic. They just used the War Games set. And I told my wife, and she goes, oh my gosh, you can see it. There's a panoramic, and in the background, that big screen where all the stuff was on is back there, and there's cops sitting back there. And so they literally just used the War Games set.
Speaking of movie crossovers, the mansion that was used in the final shootout.
Maitland's
was that also
Maitland's.
The haunted mansion?
No, it was the same mansion seen in the final shootout in Commando, 1985. Ooh,
another great movie.
Another great movie. Love that movie.
Arnold?
That it's Arnold. Yeah, Arnold and Alyssa Milano.
Doing a great job.
Doing a great job.
He carries like an entire tree on his shoulder.
Robin, I like when you mention my movies.
Chicken and rice. I'll tell you what else. Did you talk about the highest grossing R-rated movie?
I did.
You talked about
that? Well, no, I haven't said that.
Okay, so this was the highest grossing R-rated film in the U.S. until The Matrix came out in 2003.
That's not what I read.
Yeah, if inflation were to take into account, it would be the third highest grossing R-rated film after The Exorcist and The Godfather.
So you're saying R-rated
film. R-rated, yes.
I saw that it was the highest grossing R-rated comedy until The Hangover in the 2000s.
Yeah.
So I also saw Axel Foley is ranked number 55 on Empire Magazine's 100 Greatest Movie Characters of All Time. A couple of examples ahead of Foley are Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ferris Bueller, Peter Venkman. Uh-huh. But here's the top five. In case you want to know who the top five characters in all movies are.
Okay.
At number five, Ellen Ripley of the Alien movies.
Uh-huh.
At number four, Batman. At number three, Han Solo or Han Solo, depending how you'd like to sound that out. At number two is one James Bond. James Bond.
Oh, okay.
And then number one is Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah. So, that makes sense.
Yep. Fun fact. Mr. Ron Burgundy was number 16.
Oh, ooh,
good. So
he should be higher.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I am Ron Burgundy.
I read that the director flipped a coin.
I love it.
Yeah, that's how he decided after being.
He's like, should I do this movie?
Down.
I don't know. Flip
had the coin framed and it hangs in hung in his office after that.
That's a story to tell.
That's right.
Right there. Any other interesting facts from y'all?
I like one of them was when they were filming in Detroit one time, they had an off-duty cop accompanying them.
Oh.
And he refused to go into a housing project.
He's like, nope, you're on your own.
The filming crew would go where the cops would not.
Oh.
Yeah.
I have a couple things. I have that the song Nasty Girl used in the strip club scene was recommended by one of the they hired real strippers.
Yeah.
And she recommended the dance because she used it in her routine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the folks on the set said, well, she's an expert. Yeah. Let's do that, right?
That's good.
The satellite tracking.
She knows what she's talking about.
The satellite tracking system.
Oh, I read that.
The LAPD uses in the movie to track Rosewood and Foley did not exist in 1984, but was invented later and is a predecessor to modern GPS. So did Beverly Hills Cop inspire or invent modern day GPS?
Yes, they did.
Our phones, everything are thanks to Beverly Hills Cop.
Now everybody knows where we're at all the time.
Yeah.
The door to the police station in Detroit Foley walks through in the beginning has Investigaton Operations Division.
I saw that spelled wrong.
Written on it. They forgot the I.
Yeah.
The director said he knew about it and it annoyed him the whole film, but he figured in 1984, he wasn't super concerned anyone would notice it. People noticed it.
Yeah. That's it. I found that that this was the film debut for Damon Wayans.
I know.
As he's Banana really Man.
Yeah. And Banana Man. He's listed as Banana Man. But what I thought in my notes here, I put, he mentions peaches, plums and bananas.
And bananas.
I thought the peaches and
how
the plums.
Fitting for our show is that.
He's like, here,
but do you think Damon
just take the banana.
Can eat them for hours?
I don't
That's what we wonder.
Okay.
Because our gentleman on our pillow over there can do so. Man,
that's a creepy ass pillow. I'm just telling
you. Creepy ass pillow.
All right.
I do not like it. All right.
I have no more interesting facts.
No more. The only last one I got was actually Inspector Todd.
He said no more.
I did.
There you go.
But guess what?
Yeah.
Everything's mixed up.
That's
I am a Robster today.
Hey.
Oh, don't do it.
Don't do what?
Don't save it.
Save it?
Save it.
Okay. Save what?
I already know what he's going to do. I want him to save it.
Okay. I will say that
I did a lot of work on
it. It was
that.
Included on It was included so on the
American. I should be a Rob and what? Take it from you.
No.
No? You all not. Right. Damn it.
Oh, he knows where you're going with.
Yes.
I want it. I put a lot I'll of work into it.
I want it.
Because he's the creative genius behind the show, he gets what he wants, apparently.
Right. Let me flex on camera.
So I'm going to go ahead and just be quiet.
I mean, that's fine.
No, so it's included among the American Film Institute's 1998 list of the 400 movies nominated for the top 100 greatest American movies.
Nice.
And it's included among the 1001 movies you must see before you die.
I agree.
People, critics love it. Yes. Hey, let's talk about plot holes. Oh, do you have any plot holes?
I don't know if
or
I have plot holes.
Questionable moments.
I do. Yeah. So my first one is, it's 1984.
Yes. Yeah.
How did the bad guys find Mikey? So they literally show up when he comes to the apartment.
Yeah.
There's no MapQuest back then. There's no GPS.
Yeah. They were tracking
There's
him.
No nothing. If they did follow him all the way from LA, they knew what he was doing. Why did they wait until after he went out to the pool hall, had drinks on? Why didn't they just kill him earlier? Yeah. Like, why are they? And then if they're professional killers, why did they leave? And you got to have a movie. But why would you leave Axel alive? Okay,
I do have that in my notes. So, I wondered that. They do it multiple times. Because then later in the movie, they kidnap Jenny.
Yeah.
And they just...
Why?
Why?
Just kill
just
them.
Just take her out.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Nobody's going to know. It's 84.
And then the bad guy punches him in the stomach in the warehouse.
Multiple times.
Just shoot him. Like, you're mad already because he threw you over the buffet table. Right? So I just wonder how they found him. Because... Yeah. They showed up the exact same time Mikey did. How did they even know when he, because he stole the bonds, took off. How do they know when he took off? How do they know where he's going?
Yeah.
Did they go to the airport and see he's flying on that plane? Yeah. So I just found it interesting that they were able to walk in at that exact moment. Now we have to have the movie.
Yeah.
So, but it's a little bit of a plot hole. Like, how did they get there? You know what I mean? So, and when they kill Mikey, he gets two shots to the head.
Yeah.
No blood. No blood splatter on the wall. Nothing on the carpet. That was close range. That's
coming back on him.
That's making a mess.
And nobody saw anything.
So
yeah. My biggest plot hole that is when he, so after the shooting, him and, Inspector Todd, they have their, he puts them on vacation basically.
Yes.
So after Mikey is killed, Axel drives his Chevy Nova from Detroit to Beverly Hills.
Yes.
That is 2,300 miles.
It's a good drive.
To investigate the crime, a distance about 2,300 miles. When he enters Victor Matlin's office, he says that Mikey visited him a couple days ago.
Correct.
Meaning Axel would have to have covered 2,300 miles in 24 hours by car.
I just want to
It's an impossible feat when you consider that fuel and rest stops are required. And it's a crappy blue Nova. That car's not making it.
I'm just
2,300 miles in 24 hours.
I shall interject.
Okay.
Okay. I drove when I was stationed in Florida. I drove from Florida to Helensburgh, Washington.
You did, nonstop.
It was like 2.5 days. I stopped basically to go to the bathroom and get food. I was chugging Red Bull. I was doing whatever I had to do, head out the window.
You were doing Coke.
You know, radio up real loud. Doing the thing where you get the jello neck, right? So, but I did make it. And I kept telling myself, like, I'd hit San Francisco and it would be like Sacramento 4 hours or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, well, 4 more hours and I'll rest.
Yeah.
And I got Sacramento. It's like 2 hours to the border. Well, I'll get to the border of Oregon and I'll rest. Cause then tomorrow I just got to drive through Oregon. Yeah. Then I got there and I'm like, well, Roseburg's 2 hours away. My aunt and uncle live in Roseburg, so I could sleep there for free.
Yeah.
And then I hit that and I'm like, well, my parents' house is 2.5 hours away. Yeah. So I'll just go there. And I show up at like 4 in the morning. My dad's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm here.
No, I'm here.
Welcome.
I had nothing else.
So I'm not saying you're not wrong that it would be tough.
Yeah.
But it's not impossible.
Yeah.
And just, you're not stopping for a lot of sightseeing. You're not checking out the Alps. True. You're not going to see the Grand Canyon. You're not hitting Wally's
World.
Did
you say the Alps?
Nothing's happening here.
I don't think the Alps are in the United States.
The Alps are in the United States.
They're there. You just got to look hard enough.
I said that on purpose to see if you catch it.
Yeah.
The Rockies, Rob.
Yeah. Yep. The Rockies.
Perhaps the Appalachians. Yeah,
John Denver's full of shit.
They're the other way. Yeah. He told me it was the Alps. So
the only other thing I've some questions, we'll get to it later. But the sirens on top of the cars, at the beginning, and the those are the biggest.
Yeah. Did you see the police cars? It's like a magnet on the side of their car. It wasn't even they didn't even look like cop cars.
They're the craziest
cop cars ever.
All right.
So I had one other interesting fact. I'm sorry. I just wanted to share.
No, it's
when
the
he
chair.
Checks into the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Yeah.
He gets a suite. And they charge him for the single room. The single room rate was $238 a night. Yep. But I did that.
Inflation.
$720 today is what I got.
Oh, no, that's good. That 2019 was $630.
720 in 2024.
That leads me to one of the plot holes I put. How did he plan on paying for that? Because he tells Jenny, I can't afford it either.
No, he's just
he's going down there.
It's just like everything else.
Ready to pay.
He's like everything else. He's going to scam himself out of it. Right? Because in the beginning, my son watched this with me, and we'll get to Connor's Corner later, but he was a little taken aback when he yelled the N-word out real loud.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And he was like, oh. I was like, yeah. So he wasn't quite used to that. So,
all right. Any other questionable plot?
I don't have any other question about it. Do you have questionable plot holes?
I don't. I'm just still wondering why they threw him through the window instead of just taking him out the door. They got to replace the window.
No, they want to prove, but they're proving a point.
Because the whole time there's a guy walking in front of them as he's being carried.
Yeah.
You're thinking, oh, he's going to open the door for them.
But they want to prove through the window. So.
Yeah, that is a little shocking.
Well, before we jump to our categories, is that what you have next?
That is what's next.
I have a couple. I wrote a couple reviews down,
and
I wanted to read them. We never do a lot of reviews, so I just wanted to read them. So our boy Roger Ebert, not a fan of the Beverly Hills Cop.
He was not.
Yeah. He gave it 2.5 stars. He found the Beverly Hills Hotel check-in scene an embarrassment. He said playing the trifle angry black man is played out, is what he said. I watched this on YouTube. I got to watch the original, like, 1984 thing where him and Siskel are sitting in the balcony. Yeah. Yes. So, by ghetto looking, all kinds of ghetto looking. So, he says, Taggart and Rosewood remind him of Abbott and Costello and are two of the most inept cops he's ever seen in a movie. He says, we don't know if this is an action or a comedy. It's supposed to be both, Roger. Overall, Murphy's talents are wasted and the movie plays like a TV sitcom. Wah, wah. Siskel, also very critical, says the director did a very bad job and it was a bad script. Siskel and Ebert, I'm going to go out on a limb and say we're a lot of wrong on this one.
Because
everyone loved it and people still love it today. So, but you know what? I don't like to take Roger Ebert's word for everything.
No.
So I went on and found a couple reviews from Average Joe's.
You get a second around opinion.
Average Joe's
second
gym.
Opinion.
Average Joe's gym. Yes.
Okay.
So a good review. 10 out of 10. Beverly Hills Tops. That's the person. He wrote it in July 2013.
Beverly Hills Tops.
That was the name, right?
Wow, so that's clever.
Eddie Murphy, coming off of Trading Places and 48 Hours, knocks this performance out of the park with a pure 80s soundtrack, violence, action, and a bundle of laughs. This is one of the best comedies of all time. Wow. So that's what he wrote that, right?
Wow.
Bad review. 1 out of 10. So the title of this review is Neverly Hills Plop.
Wow.
Very clever, right? Yes.
Oh, man.
This was written in April of 2023, so I'm going to guess a young person. This is such a horrible and overrated movie.
That's a young person.
His laugh is not funny, and they keep playing the same annoying synth song over and over again. My brain can't take it. Casting Eddie Murphy as a cop makes as much sense as casting Stephen Hawking as a wrestler, Ray Charles as a sniper, and Gary Coleman as a basketball player. The only thing good that came out of this movie was that Sylvester Stallone was able to become the epic Cobra. That's it.
That's some good stuff.
That was a young person.
That was the young person.
That's stupid, basically. That's basically what they said.
Neverly Hills Plop.
That's wrong. Okay.
Very good.
Well, we're ready to jump in and check out our favorite parts of the movie.
And?
It's category time.
It is category time, except that I don't have a category button.
We went over the category.
We always go over it, but then I can't find it.
Get to the categories!
Kip programmed a lot of buttons this week.
A lot of buttons this week.
And my brain is melting a little bit over here. So I'm pulling a Rob, and I'll have the look.
He's got things happening.
This is the Rob right here.
I don't know what to do with my arms. I get nervous. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. When I get nervous,
He goes, and then he goes like this. He goes, I don't like that. I don't like it. Anyway, back to you.
I don't like this.
Back to you, Rob.
Those of you listening on audio only, you need to check this one out on the YouTube.
Yes. There's going to be a lot going on.
A lot of action.
Back to you, Rob.
All right. So category one.
Category one.
Is favorite quote.
Yes.
Parentheticals from the whole movie.
Aren't that a
clue? Yeah. That's what the writer says.
Yes.
That's right.
So we're going to go with Kurt today.
First of all, I is the writer, so I like your little shot you threw at me right there.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah, you were. Mm. You literally said it out loud.
Well, I didn't say any names, so
there's only three of us, and we've established many times who writes the scripts on this show. Jackass.
Jeez. So much hostility Jackass. Today. Okay. I know. Man, is. Everybody take tired. A breath.
I'm
take
tired.
A breath.
I'm tired.
All right. While you guys are sleeping, I'm going to go ahead and go because I have it a little longer. I'm just going to shorten it all to the part that I love the best. So yes. I'm going with it's the first time he goes into the art studio.
Yeah.
Yes. And we've got the I was wondering how much something like this went for. $130,000. Get the fuck out of here! No, I cannot. It's serious because it's a very important piece.
Very important piece. Yeah.
But it's just the no, I cannot after they get the fuck out of here because that's the part I will do over and over for the rest of my life.
I have a question. Uh-huh. Do you? So this is our quote category.
Yeah.
So I'm going to jump ahead for a sec.
That's okay.
I'm creatively do whatever I want, guy.
Here
so
goes.
Our category three is favorite scene, and I have this also as my favorite scene. So, does anybody else have that as their favorite scene?
No.
Okay, then we can talk about it again later.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I just mainly for the.
Because I was going to say, if he's already introducing it, then we could just cover it now because it's an epic, like, popular scene. But if we're going to, then I'll talk about it then.
Yeah, let's
do You know that. What? Just tell me.
How about just get the fuck out of here?
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. Just wait for category three. Just tell me to wait for category three.
There we go. You're going to, what's your quote?
Oh, my quote,
favorite
yes.
quote. Your quote is
Surge. Get the fuck out of here. No, I
there you go. Okay.
So mine is, I have two. But I'm going to read them both.
That's fine. We usually only, we read more than one.
My 1A is, after Foley disarms the burglar, in the strip club and gets him on the ground, Rosewood hops up, pointing his pistol and yells, "Don't move, roll over." And then Foley says, "Way to go, Rosewood. You're some kind of cop. You know that?" I think that's fantastic. And then I really like the part with the police chief. That guy's cast brilliantly.
Yeah.
The way he talks is brilliant. But after he yells at Foley and he walks away, he goes, "Is this the man that ruined the buffet at the Harrow Club this morning?"
I love that.
I think that is hilarious. I was laughing so much.
He can't hear you through the walls.
He can. Yeah. I love the way he delivers it. Yeah. Is this the man that wrecked the buffet at the Harrow Club this morning?
Did you see that during that scene, he's holding a rolled up paper?
Oh, yeah.
It's actually the script because they kept giving him so many rewrites that he just walked on set with it and they're like, it works.
Hilarious. I don't know if it'll come up later, but did you read Eddie Murphy apparently didn't partake of caffeine?
No, he doesn't.
Drugs
or anything.
Yeah, so
alcohol, none of it.
Yeah, so in the strip club scene, somebody giving him some coffee and he's like literally jumping out of his skin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. My quote is, and I don't know why I like it, but it's when Rosewood and Taggart come back to the police station and they're getting grilled by Bogomil for the bananas in the tailpipe, and Bogomil says, "A banana in your tailpipe? How could you not notice a man sticking a banana in your tailpipe?" And Rosewood says, "Well, he distracted us, sir." Bogomil says, "And how do you do that?" "Well, he sent us a late supper, sir."
Yes, a late supper.
He said a late supper. And just the way he says,
what did he say? I believe it was a shrimp salad sandwich.
And he goes, "Well, how did he do that?" And he goes, "Well, the guy came out," and he goes, "Taggart's gone."
Taggart. I love Taggart because he's like Rosewood.
He doesn't really want to know. He goes, "Oh, okay."
Oh, it's so good. But there's lots of other quotes. I mean, the banana in the tailpipe's classic.
Yeah.
When the other cops come up to him. He goes, "We won't be falling for the banana. We won't be falling for the banana in the tailpipe because you've been hanging out with this guy too long." Yeah. He says, "You got to get bass in your voice." "Look, man, I ain't falling no banana no tailpipe."
Oh, that's funny. Category number two.
Yes.
Favorite Eddie Murphy moment. Parentheticals, quote, / scene.
Ooh,
/
very good. Scene. Yeah, he's good at reading the copy I gave
him. That's right. I read anything that's put in front of me.
That's your man.
Good job.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
That's right. We'll go with you.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
All right. So I've got, after the strip club scene, they're back at the police station and they're getting in trouble. And he says, he tells the whole story, right, or whatever, at the end of the story, when he's talking about how he didn't do anything, and because the Bogomil asked him, "Why are you at the strip club?" He says, "I don't know what you teach these fellows." but they're not just regular cops. Okay. They're super cops. And the only thing they're missing
super cop.
Are these are capes. And then at the end of that, Taggart goes, that's not what happened, sir. And he tells him the truth. And he goes, I just want you to know something before I leave. The super cop story was working. And it's so funny in that scene, because when he says it's working, it shows Bogomil's face. He's laughing. Yeah. Like, he's smiling, laughing. And they said Judge Reinhold had to pinch himself in the leg not to laugh because it was so funny. But he goes, I've been trying to figure you guys out. He goes, but I haven't done it yet. But for some reason, you just want to fuck up a good lie. So that's my bit. The super cop story from Eddie Murphy is great. He goes, the super cop story was working.
Yes. And I had read that most of that was ad-libbed.
It was.
That sounds good. Let's go with Kurt.
Ooh. Yeah, all right. So I originally also had that, but I'm going to go with number two, which is after he gets thrown out of the window and is arrested.
Oh, I love that part.
And he's going, tell me, sir, what's the charge? Possession of a concealed weapon and disturbing the peace. Disturbing the peace? I got thrown out of a window. What's the fucking charge for getting pushed out of a moving car, huh? Jaywalking? This is bullshit.
So good.
But then I like when he's riding back in the back of the car and he goes, this is the cleanest and nicest police car I've ever been in my life. This thing's nicer than my apartment.
It's so good.
And he asks the cops, hey, if we pass any movie stars, can you point them out for me? I've never seen that shit before.
Well, and then what they say later when they take him out of the jail cell, and he goes, I've never been in a jail cell with a phone. I ordered a pizza.
He walks out and goes, somebody will eat it.
My Eddie Murphy moment was, you had already said it. It's when he is outside the residence and the backup. The backup to, you know, just the way he says, I find myself laughing out loud at that scene. Just the way he mocks him, you know, but
do you have a mock
Axel,
for us?
Foley, says, what, y'all the second team? And he goes, we're the first team. And Detective Foster says, yeah, and we're not going to fall for a banana in the tailpipe. But the way he says it, he goes, oh, you're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe? And she'd be more. And then he does. You do it really good, right? He goes, look, man, I am popping a banana in the tailpipe. But yeah, it should be more natural.
Yeah.
I like what you've been hanging out with this guy too long. But just the way he mocked him, I just think that's so funny.
The look on Foster's face, too, because he knows Foster knows he's wrong. He's looking at him. He's like, he's right. He's calling me out here. Yeah. I don't have enough bass in my voice. It's kind of a callback to his Saturday Night Live character.
Mr. Robinson's
neighborhood. Yeah. He goes, this is how we enter the door in my neighborhood. Who is it? That's really.
I remember we used to watch that and we'd laugh. One of my favorite parts is the look on his face when somebody knocks on the door and he just goes, who could that be?
Let's see.
Oh my gosh. All right. Category three.
We did category three.
We didn't count. Don't micromanage me.
He doesn't know his fingers.
I know. Gee whiz. I can do something.
I'm trying.
Category three.
Yes.
Is favorite scene.
Favorite scene.
No parentheticals.
No parentheticals on this one. You should go first because you haven't gone first yet.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Gosh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go first.
Okay.
Well, I will tell you, we talked about the Surge introduction. I thought that was, but it's not. I like the chase scene. Okay. I think the opening chase scene is very memorable. I remember that. And for some reason, I remember it paired with the song.
Mm-hmm. That
you know,
dude in that truck hits every car in Detroit.
Yes.
Every car.
Yes.
Like the amount of damage that guy caused was insane.
And just him swinging off the chain, very iconic movie moment.
All those boxes are empty, though. They're flying around a little too and hitting into him. Nothing's happening. Yeah. Those are empty boxes.
Yeah.
I saw them fall out, though. Cigarettes everywhere.
Fall out. Oh, I fell out.
Fell out.
That's a good scene, Rob.
All right. Yeah. So truck chase scene.
Truck chase scene. Ooh. With the Pall Malls and the Lucky Strikes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Anyway. I'm going to go next.
You go next.
He already said he was. I'm going to go next.
How about you go next?
Mine is right after yours when they're in the locker room and he's being just chewed out by really Inspector good. Todd.
I love
Damn
Inspector
right.
Todd. Just because Inspector Todd is great.
He is great.
Yeah. I love Jeffrey when he goes, I tried to tell you, Jeffrey, this is none of your fucking business. And he goes, this is not my locker.
This is not my locker.
Like earlier where he goes, he said this is your biggest screw up. And he goes, I disagree. I don't think so. Anyway, your favorite scene?
Well, my favorite scene is the Surge scene because I think it's the funniest thing in the movie. And I can't do justice to it.
Yes, you
so
can.
So we actually have the isolated clip for it.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Excellent. So I will let I will let them actually do it.
I'm fine. My name is Serge, and how can I help you?
Yeah, I'm looking for Miss Jenny Summers.
It's very busy today. Maybe you give me your name?
My name's Axel Foley.
And what is portaining?
Portaining.
I didn't understand what you said.
Pertaining, what it's meaning, regarding.
Oh, what's it regarding? I'm an old acquaintance of hers.
Danae? Hey. One moment.
Danae?
What is this?
Only run and tell me Summers that Mr. Ahmed Foley is here to see.
Axel Foley. Axel.
Ahmed, Ahwell.
Axel.
Foley.
Foley is here to see her. These are old acquaintances. Done. This
cover this song.
It's like the breast of a dog to scrub for the customer. It's not sexy.
It's not sexy at all.
May I offer you something to drink? A wine, a cocktail, espresso. A
nice lemon twist.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
I'll make it myself right back there with a little lemon twist. It's good. You should try
it's good.
No, I'm fine.
I see you look at this piece.
Yeah, I was wondering how much something like this went for.
$130,000. Get the fuck out of here. I cannot, it's serious, because it's very important, base.
Have you ever sold one of these?
Sell it yesterday to a collector. Get the fuck out of here!
I'm serious, I said it myself. Axel Foley, what on earth are you doing here?
How you doing?
I'm fine, hold a second, I'll be right down.
Yeah, so that's my favorite scene. That's the best scene. I like that it's obviously all improv.
Yeah.
There was originally supposed to be two guys.
I read that.
But they said he was so funny, Bronson Pinchot as Serge,
yeah,
that Donnie just turns into the gopher boy.
Yeah.
Donnie.
Donnie. What is this? That is not sexy. It's not,
I like the pertaining.
And I even love later when they go back and Rosewood talks to him and he goes, would you like an espresso?
Oh,
and
yeah.
He goes,
he's on a lemon
sure.
Twist.
He goes, you want a lemon twist? He goes, if it's no problem, of course not. Don't be stupid.
Yeah, don't be stupid. Yeah.
So, yep, that's my favorite scene. I think it's the funniest scene in the movie.
I think you're right. So, I think you're
a lot
right.
of funny scenes, but that one I always remember. And if I see it online or on TikTok or anything, I always watch it and I still laugh. Just the way the patining. I've done that to people in my life.
Yeah.
What is this patining?
Yeah. What?
I just look at you like, what?
We have some some footage floating around on a drive somewhere of you doing a really like an odd version of
Serge.
Yeah. I can't remember what started. It started as a Serge and then it turned into this weird.
In Beverly Hills Cop 2, he's in it again.
Yes.
And he goes,
a lot more.
He goes, hey, Serge. He goes, it's Serge. He goes, it's not laundry detergent. Serge or something like that. It's funny. So, but of course, as we all know, the Serge then propelled him into Bauke Bartakomus because they saw that and then they asked him to do it for Perfect Strangers. So,
when I read that he almost didn't do it.
Yeah, he wanted to go to what? Italy or something like that?
Florence, or they're moving or he's going on vacation or something.
He didn't think it was serious. He said he didn't think it was a serious thing. And then they were like, no. And originally he didn't have many lines. But then when he started riffing with Eddie Murphy, they were like, oh, it's gold. Keep it.
It's gold. Yeah. It's gold, Jerry.
Gold, Jerry.
Category 4.
Yes.
Ooh.
Favorite actor / character, parenthetical, not named Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, because otherwise you clowns will just go, Eddie Murphy. Of course, Eddie Murphy is everyone's favorite character. But let's talk about some of the other, because
not true.
This whole movie, in my opinion, is cast perfectly sans one person, which we'll talk about later. But I think the rest of the movie is cast perfectly. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, you.
Oh, oh.
I do. I do have an omission.
So. Oh, okay. We'll go with you first, favorite actor. Yeah.
All right. So this is leading back to him yielding me some time from
before.
So my favorite non Eddie Murphy is Inspector Toth.
Yes.
So he is played by one actor named Gil Hill. He's only got two scenes, but his delivery, amazing. He comes in like, he's like John Wetland coming out of the bullpen. Dennis Eckersley, he's just throwing fire. All right. Or Rob, this is a good one. You know, he reminds me of Vinny, the Microwave Johnson.
Yeah.
Comes off the bench, score 20 points, goes sit back down, take a nap. He uses the F word as well as anyone I've ever seen in any movie. And that includes Samuel L. Jackson, because he rolls it off the tongue like it's easy. When Axel asks him, how do you know it was a professional hit? His response, and Connor laughed his butt off on this too. He says, I'm just walking to this town from the cotton fields. Whoever killed your friend wasn't worried about your narrow little ass. So I think he's amazing. Like the two scenes he's in, again, he's just spitting fire the whole time. But I looked at Gil Hill, And he's got an interesting past.
Yes.
Right? Actual Detroit police officer, joined the force in 1959, made a detective in 1969, and was known nationally for getting confessions out of the most notorious killers. He was a member of the investigation team in the 1979 Atlanta child murders. Mm-hmm. He was made an inspector in charge of homicide in 1982, retired in 1989. He was offered other parts after Beverly Hills Cop, but turned them down, appearing only in Beverly Hills Cop 2 and 3. Stop banging your microphone, Kurt. Hill said the only difference between Inspector Todd and himself was that he, in real life, did not curse as much as Inspector Todd.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah. Did you have Inspector Todd was not your
Inspector not Todd was not mine. Mine went with Bronson Pinchot.
Okay, I was Inspector Todd.
Inspector Todd was
he's
right
just throwing fire the whole time. And he comes in. He owns two scenes.
Yeah, and can't stop him. I like his. He had three quotes that I really liked. He said, "You're damn right, wise ass," and he said, "Your ass is skating on thin ice as it is." And then his whole thing about I didn't just walk into this town from the cotton fields.
Oh man,
but. I also read that he was a real Detroit police. He ran for city council.
He also lost ran for
his,
mayor.
Yeah, he lost his bid for mayor to Detroit to this guy named Kwame Kilpatrick. Mm-hmm. If you ever get a chance, there's a really good podcast. It's called Crime Town. Ooh. And there's a whole season on Kwame Kilpatrick. The guy was dirty.
Yeah. And later Gil Hill got wrapped up in a little of that police controversy as well.
Yes.
But overall, he's coming in. But I gotta also say, Taggart, amazing. Mm-hmm. I love Taggart. Plays straight man perfect. Rosewood is on fire. I think Bogomil's doing a great job. Victor Maitland's awesome. He's like a Bond villain. That guy's great.
He's really good.
Like, he could be a Bond villain. Yeah. No, he's good.
He's kind of like, he reminds me of Silence of the Lions.
He gives a little bit, you know, clever. He's got a small accent. I'm not sure what it is, but it's pretty effective. Yeah. And then the chief of police. He's just got the two scenes.
Yeah, I like that guy.
Taggart, why don't you tell me what has actually happened?
Who's your favorite character?
Mine was Bronson Pinchot.
But here he said just Bronson because Pinchot.
He already did. Because of everything we did with the whole giant long scene.
That's right.
You just can't wait to see what he's going to say and how he says it.
I know.
Every time he came on.
He's so good.
He makes us laugh. Category number five. Worst / boring character, hypothetical, not needed or painful to watch.
And you don't have to have anyone here. I only had one.
Ooh, let's see.
I'm going to go before you just to anger you first. Because you just said that Victor Maitland was good. I couldn't stand him.
Really?
Oh, you're crazy.
I couldn't stand his monotone,
I love it,
almost robot voice when he was talking.
It was too much.
All I put was he's definitely no Hans Gruber.
No, I like it.
Oh.
He was well before Hans, though.
I know, but he is no Hans Gruber.
You have no idea who you're dealing with.
and it just
was, I like it. It's great. I told you, it's like a Bond villain.
He really put me off first when he's wearing, the robe or the kimono?
I like it.
Over the shirt and tie. First of all, it's weird.
Kimonos were big in 84. A lot of people wearing kimonos. Okay. The uber urban Japanese look was in.
It was in.
A lot of swords. A lot of kimonos.
A lot of swords.
A lot of geishas. There was a whole vibe going on in LA at that time.
I understood what he was trying to go for. I didn't like it.
Didn't like it. All right. You didn't like Victor Maitland.
Get away from me, Mr.
You didn't like who?
I don't like Jenny Summers. She is
this guy.
She is the worst thing of this movie. And look, I got nothing against the actress Lisa Elbacher. She's just not doing a good job in this movie. She's not acting good. Her delivery's not good. She's not a good screamer. For the couple times she has to scream.
She's not a screamer.
Yeah. It's just an empty shell. Everyone else is throwing
heat.
Everyone else is throwing heat in this movie, and she's definitely given up like 9 earned runs in a half an inning, and she's got to get taken out. That's it.
I put, of all the actresses in 84, this is who we picked.
Yeah, I know. And we can talk about that a little bit in the recast area because that's, I got some opinions.
All right.
Okay. So, but Jenny Summers, no thanks.
No thanks.
How do they know each other? They said back from the neighborhood.
Yeah, they grew up together.
She's from Detroit.
I was going to say, she's from inner city Detroit.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. Inner city Detroit.
That
would have been in like the 70s.
She wouldn't have stood out at all.
Man. It's just a weird dynamic. And then Mikey sounds like he's from New York.
Yeah.
But then he was from the old block too. It's just a weird.
I'm shocked you don't have some goofy, like, what theory
or theory like, about what know, how I don't it, like, have anything.
Oh, look,
it's hard. It I can't tie it back family, to cocktail.
Family matters.
Yeah, I can't tie it back to cocktail. I can't do any of it.
Urkel is the love child of
I guess
blah blah blah.
Mikey could have been working for the uncle in cocktail.
There you go.
And he could have sent him out on his behalf to Detroit.
That's right.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. But then he was a youngster. Maybe he sent him away from New York to get him away from the gang.
See?
Then he ended up in stealing a car and going to jail. Mikey's complicated.
It all falls apart.
So,
Mikey's complicated.
He's complicated.
Category number six.
Ooh.
Favorite song, hypothetical, from the movie or soundtrack?
It's not hypothetical.
Parenthetical.
It's a real thing. It's not hypothetical at all.
Hypothetically speaking. Hypothetically speaking. Yeah. What is your favorite?
If there was music in this movie.
I like how the writer specified, it says, favorite song, parenthetical, from the movie or soundtrack. So we just to clarify that we just couldn't pick any, just our favorite song.
Your favorite song.
Yeah, from the movie.
From the movie.
It'll come clear when I explain.
Oh, yes. Okay. All right.
Okay. You go first. You haven't gone first yet.
Oh, all right. I like The Heat Is On by Glenn Frey.
Mm-hmm. I'm not happy with the Frey thing. That's twice. Tweets. I don't like the tweets.
Glenn Frey, I know.
R.I.P.
Glenn Frey. Cashbox called this song, quote, a hard rocking outing featuring the distinctive vocals of ex-Eagle Frey, and added that it contains, quote, a signature horn riff and some effective dynamics.
Yeah.
Billboard said, quote, it features a bustling rock and roll beat, electric organ or equivalent, and a wailing sax.
I love it. Ooh,
I like that.
Got to have a wailing sax.
It's one of the best sax songs of the 80s.
Yeah. You got to have a good sax song.
Yep.
It reached number two on the Billboard Hot 100. Overall, the soundtrack was reviewed by Billboard Magazine in the issue dated December 15th, 1984, and debuted on the U.S. Billboard 200 the week ending January 12th, 1985 at number 177. And then it hit number one in the U.S.
The Music Man has come
in
out
in 85.
Instead of the movie
you
Boy.
Talked about how it won a Grammy for best score soundtrack for visual media in 86.
Really good.
And then you talked about the Nasty Girl song by Vanity Six.
Like it. Written by?
I believe it was Prince.
Prince.
Yes. Yep. Played during the strip club. It's princy. Not included in the soundtrack. So all of you people going, I like that song. Don't go buy it.
Why are you going through all the songs? By the way, because Nasty Girl is mine.
Hence the hypotheticals I put, movie or that's soundtrack.
The hypotheticals.
That's why I said that earlier, because right. Nasty Girl is my song.
Tell us about Nasty Girl.
You haven't been
Nasty
around him.
Nasty Girl.
Kurt, you haven't been around him when he talks about music. He just starts going off the rails. I know, he
just went through all of them.
Steals the whole album.
I blacked out.
Anything musical, don't let him go first next time.
I'm aware.
So I did go with Nasty Girl. I just said it's the perfect song for the background of the strip club scene.
Right.
Originally recorded by Vanity Six, like you said, on the Warner Brothers record label.
Ooh, good.
It was on their self-titled debut album, Vanity Six.
That was a good album.
It became a sizable hit on the U.S. and R&B radio, and it hit number one on the U.S. Hot Dance Club Play chart for 4 weeks in November 1982. The song was only knocked off the number one position by Prince's own 1999.
Wow, he was everywhere.
You know, that was very well done with some music background. We only let you in the house for movies.
There's a reason why that. Frank.
You know, with that ability you just threw out, you might have to do a musical episode one of these days.
Well... maybe around end of August into September, I can do one. It's called the Foo Fighters.
That one's happening. But there may be an opportunity for more. You may have more around that collar than we give you.
I do have more
credit for
because you guys like to go around the world on some of these.
Yeah, we do.
Nasty Girl reached number 7 on the Dutch singles chart in November 82. It's number 11 on the Belgium charts.
Belgium.
Yeah. Yes. And the lead singer Vanity. Belgium. Who later became a Christian preacher.
Very good.
And subsequently denounced the song and told members of her congregation who listened to the song to keep praying for the Holy
Spirit. Well, that went the other way. I thought you were going to tell me because she became a preacher, it then went number one on the Christian charts.
No. Oh. Billboard also did name it song number 37 on their list of 100 greatest girl group songs
of
all time.
Never heard of it.
You should cover that song? Since we're talking about Christian rock, Michael W. Smith, that would sound good.
Ooh, and Amy Grant.
Ooh, a duo. Nasty Girl.
Wow. Yes.
How would they have to change the words though? Kind of a little dirty girl.
Yeah.
They can't say nasty. It's a little
no,
too gross
but they could do
them.
It from the perspective of a nasty girl.
Oh yeah.
That's
becomes changed. A good
all right. Well, Mike and Amy, if you're listening,
we know you are.
Record that for us. Send it in. We'll debut it on this podcast.
if Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant are listening,
they're listening.
Mm. She heard that there's some weirdo out there that's like, I really love Amy Grant. So she tunes in every week now. So is it my turn for favorite song?
It is now.
Yeah.
All right. First of all, I wanted to say, and I coined this phrase while I was watching it the other night.
Wow.
Coined it.
Wow.
This is one of the most 80s sounding 80s soundtracks that I've heard.
That's perfect. Really stupid.
No, it's great. First of all,
put it on a shirt.
Don't like it. I just might. This is really difficult. You both mentioned two awesome songs. Patti LaBelle's got great songs. Yeah. There are songs flying in your face.
I know what he's going to pick.
But I'm going with Neutron Dance.
Oh.
Yep. The Truck Chase at the beginning, Pointer Sisters.
Yeah.
All right. It's just a great 80s song. And for the longest time, I recognized this movie by that song more than Axel F. Even though they play Axel F more often, Neutron Dance was on the radio more often, at least when I listen to the radio. And I just remember it more memorably and associate it with this movie a little more. Now, of course, Axel F, I know it a lot more. But Neutron Dance, to me, as soon as I hear it on the radio or anything, I think Beverly Hills Cop. Mm-hmm. So I like Neutron Dance. I'm a big Pointer Sisters fan. So
are you?
I do. I like them.
Okay.
You know?
I'm
putting you on the spot. Go ahead. They're listening.
They are.
No, I. Other than this movie, I don't know.
Jump. You know, they have jump. Okay. From your love.
I know it.
All right.
You don't have to sing it. I know it.
He needs to sing it.
There's a lot there. Yeah.
No.
You don't want to bottle it up. He's got to let it out.
I think that catalog's a little more full than you're giving it credit for. All right.
Category number 7.
Ooh, my favorite category.
Yes. So we're going to recast this movie.
Wow. Or you don't have to.
I went everywhere.
This is an opportunity.
Okay.
If you could say no, cast is perfect. You don't have to give anything.
Oh, I didn't know that was an option.
I guess I got to put a question mark in there.
There's no parentheticals on this one, or hypotheticals, if you will. Yeah.
Next time I'll put a question mark because then Rob will go.
Yeah. But recast? Then
you would have gone recast. So.
All right. Well, and you didn't give us, like, there's a lot of characters.
You, like, I'm just, you.
Let's go Foley.
Do a little research.
Foley.
So I said probably no one. I was just looking around 84 doing examples of who's popular in 84.
See, you went 84.
I was going to say, I tried to go 84. Oh, no. I was like, there's not a lot. So then I expanded.
So I went 84 and I said, just throwing names out that you didn't read earlier, actually. Yeah. Chevy Chase, but then it'd probably be too goofy, right? Because he's coming off vacation. So maybe I thought Gutenberg, but he's already in Police Academy that year.
The Goot.
And again, might be too goofy, like little too new boot goofing, right? A little too much there. I was thinking maybe Tom Hanks, but then I don't know if he's funny enough at this time. I know he did Bachelor Party, but I don't know if that's Tom Hanks. And then Robin Williams, then I think it's just over the top, probably.
I was going to say, I had Robin Williams just because I thought he would be the one that's quick-witted enough to make the comebacks, but he is.
Did you say the banana in the Dale pipe?
But he's 10 years older. So
what are you doing?
Since he was 10 years older than Eddie Murphy, I thought he would have been a little too old.
What's that imitation? I said, Martin, I put that banana in your tailpipe.
I don't know what that sound was. Isolated, please.
Isolated forever. So for Eddie Murphy, I didn't really. I'd say no on Eddie Murphy. The options that were out there kind of don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I went modern day.
Timothy Chalamet.
I kept it kind of like if they were to remake it straight across for modern day times, I went with like a Don Cheadle.
Oh, okay.
Jamie Foxx.
Oh, nice.
I had Jamie Foxx.
Adam Sandler.
A Donald Glover.
Adam Sandler.
Ooh, Donald Glover.
Yeah, I thought he'd be kind of good. What is going on over here?
He went Adam Sandler all of a sudden.
Wow.
I can see Adam Sandler stuffing bananas, and that's like a Sandler joke.
I can see that.
You know.
Yeah.
I did put Andy Samberg on my note just real quick.
Good one.
Just because of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
What about Rosewood?
No.
Rosewood.
No.
You nobody. Wouldn't? No.
I got nothing. Nobody? I have nothing for the rest of the cast. I would not change one other person. I have one person to change.
Uh-huh. I was going to say, I just tried to go like just anybody from then until now. I put John Cryer as Rosewood.
Oh, yeah.
Just because he's got that little lovable but gullible ness to him.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Who would be Taggart?
Taggart's
tough. The one that I thought would be really good, if kind of more modern. For Rosewood, I liked Jason Segel.
Oh, okay.
I thought he'd play a good Rosewood. Nice. And then for Taggart, Nick Offerman.
Oh, yeah. That's not bad.
He's got kind of that old, that
yeah.
man.
And he's got the mustache.
But he can be a little, you know, no, silly.
That's not
know.
Terrible.
No, I like that one.
That's That'd good. Be,
yeah. I said we could turn Serge into a woman and he, Kristen Wiig.
No, you're not touching Serge. Serge stays the same.
Just
Serge?
Because she
all
does.
Through time. So
I did say Samuel Jackson for Inspector Todd.
I have that down too.
That seems too obvious, but yeah, you can do it.
I had to put it down.
So I think then Sam Jackson's doing an impersonation of the actual Inspector Todd because that dude's throwing fire. I love him. So, okay, so mine is Jenny Summers. We got to do better than Jenny Summers. Yeah,
I've got some.
So, in 1984, I've got Phoebe Cates. She's sitting right there. That'd be perfect. Yeah. She'd be perfect for this. Rebecca De Mornay, she just came off Risky Business. That would have been really good.
De Hornay. Swing.
So, those are a couple options I had in 84 because you can't get too big a star. So, you're not getting any Meryl Streeps and stuff in there. But Phoebe Cates or Rebecca De Hornay. Good morning.
Happening over here?
We are marble mouthed all day. It's good stuff.
Wow.
I was eating a lemon earlier. So Phoebe Cates or Rebecca De Mornay, baby boo. It all comes back to Saved by the Bell.
That's right.
This episode's rough. It's going to be off the rails. People are going to listen and be like, "What is?" Anyway, so that's what I would do. I got to get rid of the Jenny Summers character and bring in a different actress.
Yeah, I had modern. I said Amy Adams.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence.
She seems old. All right. Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Jennifer Lawrence, not bad. Zendaya.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's in everything else.
In our house, we refer she's Zendaya.
Zendaya.
Yeah, I don't think that's correct.
Is that
either.
The proper term?
I don't know.
Okay.
But
what do you,
apparently it's not, because when I say it, my kids... category 8.
Oh, this is a new category.
This is a new category that it's called... Harry Temple, quote, "I should have stayed in Aspen" moment.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you want to?
Oh. Aspen it is.
Love it. Okay. So this is a moment in the movie when the character has come to a realization that it's over.
It's over.
They've screwed up or they're done.
Yes.
So what is your moment?
My moment.
Yeah.
It's Mikey when the thug comes to meet him, because you can see Mikey's face. Even after he starts kind of being nice to him, you can see on Mikey's face he still knows what the answer is.
Oh, yeah.
So he definitely should have stayed in Aspen on that one. Yeah. So
mine was also Mikey. Just turning, and then as soon as Zach is standing there.
What do we have right now?
We got a menage on Mikey. Yeah.
I imagine when we have this menage, people are watching, so that's fine. Oh. Yeah, so.
Wow.
Mikey.
When Mikey Tendino is confronted outside his apartment.
I love the
You can tell 80s. He's crying.
Oh, yeah.
He knows.
He knows what it is. And I love the 80s trope, because they do it in all of them. It was in Die Hard, all of them. When the lead guy, in this case, Victor Maitland, they've got that one random thug. Like, he's the head security guy, goes everywhere with him, beats everybody up, but isn't quite good enough. Kind of like the old boy in Die Hard. Should have killed him lots of times, couldn't do it. In this movie, could have killed Axel many, many times, never got it done. And Victor keeps throwing him shade with some of those glances like, I mean, can you get this taken care of, or what are we doing right here, right? So, but you know, he gets his in the end.
That main guy, that guy.
Yeah.
He was in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, no, he did a good job. So, yeah. Definitely Tandito.
Aspen it is.
Yeah,
Aspen
he should have definitely stayed in Aspen.
All right. Well, those were our categories.
Oh, they were.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
That was good.
I enjoyed that thoroughly.
That's your sarcasm is thick today.
Yes. The question is, though, are you tired yet?
No.
He's doing well.
All right. Really good.
Gas tanks are still full. Good.
That's right.
Good.
My stomach's a little weird. Ooh, I don't know what's going on over there. Yeah. You know what time it is?
What time is it?
I believe it's time for Connor's Corner.
Connor's Corner.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you're new to the show, as of the debut of this show, my 18-year-old son, because he would have had a birthday before this comes out.
Happy birthday to
my
Connor.
My 18-year-old son watched this movie with me for the first time, and he gives us his honest review as a Gen Z, Gen A. I don't even know what Gen is.
I don't know.
Whatever he is.
He's new. He hasn't seen it. He go back and watch these 80s movies with me, and 80s, 90s, and he gives his honest, unbiased review, you said, because we all know it, so we have our... So, okay, so here we go. I won't lie. The two previous movies, parentheticals, Cocktail and Speed, although I claim to be great, were mediocre at best. They're fun watch, but I doubt I'll be watching them again anytime soon. On the other hand, Beverly Hills Cop is without a doubt my favorite movie out of the three so far, oh, and by a landslide, my favorite Eddie Murphy movie. The whole film from start to finish is fantastic. About halfway through the movie, Beverly Hills Cop, although it came out before it, reminded me a lot of like Die Hard. The lead actor finds himself in another city. He essentially outsmarts the entirely Beverly Hills police force. He pretty much single-handedly took out the antagonists, and he's a badass. Or cool. Don't know if you can say badass on the podcast. That's in the parentheses. He's very aware of what's going on around here. He's calm, calculating, decisive, and funny in almost every situation he encounters. There really are no flaws to this movie, in my opinion, and nothing to really critique. I think that this movie is hilarious and a masterpiece that captures the time known as the 80s. As a comedy fan, this is now one of my favorite movies of all time, and I will definitely be rewatching this sometime in the near future. The film was without a doubt a 10 out of 10. And by the way, if you haven't seen the film, you definitely need to watch this. You will love it. Side note, my favorite character, excluding Eddie Murphy's Axel Foley, would have to be Billy Rosewood. Although he's a little slow, he always seems to be having a great time, and I would personally like him to be my partner if I were a cop in Beverly Hills.
Well done.
Well done.
What would you give him?
Connor's Corner.
Grade that essay, fourth grade teacher.
Well, I did not see the spelling, because that's always very tough in fourth
spelling's
grade. True.
Spelling's good.
But he was able to read it much better than I read my own words earlier.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 10.
Nice. 10 out of 10.
A+.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, A+. A+. All right. Final judgment.
10 out of 10.
Of this movie.
10 out of 10. 100 out of 100.
You give it an A+.
Whatever numerical system we're using or alphabetical system, it gets the highest of that.
Oh, all right.
It is a fantastic movie.
Okay. Must watch at all times.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, not all the time.
I agree.
Did you show it to your family?
No.
A little too violent?
No, they just weren't up when I watched it.
The boobs?
We almost made it through the whole thing.
No, he said it at the game.
I know, but we made it through me talking about the strip club scene, and now we brought it up.
We have multiple sets of LA boobs in this one. So,
yeah.
I mean, it can't not be acknowledged. Axel Foley makes a comment about Rosewood's erection during the movie.
He does.
Or his, if he's allowed to have one.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that Taggart doesn't have one.
Taggart's a little more control.
He can control it.
I feel like Taggart, if Taggart's a sergeant in 1984.
This conversation is
Hold on. If Taggart's a sergeant in 84, he's been on the police force for a little while. Let's say 10, 15 years. So Taggart seems like maybe he could have been a Vietnam vet type who, after the Vietnam War, came back and then became a cop in Beverly Hills. That's why he's a little more rugged around the edges. So Taggart's seen some stuff, so he's not necessarily going to get the excitement at the strip club that Rosewood. Rosewood's a little wet behind the ears.
That's true.
Taggart's been around the world.
And
Taggart is not too buku.
Yeah. So. Well, he actually believes.
Kurt knows.
He actually believes.
Kurt knows the two boots.
Wow, Full Metal Jacket. Nice.
You got girlfriend in Vietnam?
Oh, no.
Time out.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Anyway, Taggart's seen some stuff. So.
He goes, the fact that he believes Foley, when Foley says, I think she likes you.
Do you know what I love the most?
Says, he was like,
he got excited and turned around. Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of a Rob situation. You smell fantastic.
I know. What are you wearing?
What are you wearing? Uh-huh. Nothing.
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 Ah. So, what I really love about Taggart is, at the beginning, Taggart's like, this dude's a clown. And then after the strip club scene, Taggart's like, nope, this guy's legit. I like how he accepts him in. And by the end, they're like, you can see they're already friends. So that's what I like.
Love it.
Yep.
Well, anything else about this movie?
I think we've got it all.
We
covered a lot.
I think we've got everything.
Yeah. There it is. Well, if you'd like to contact Rob, Kurt, or wait, that doesn't make any sense. No. I am Rob.
You are Rob.
You can't read.
He's no good at improv.
I read it exactly. I read the words on the page. Words.
Can you just improv a little bit? It's not that difficult.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Let me help you. If you'd like to contact Dave Kurt or I.
There we go.
Start with that.
All right. If you'd like to contact us, it doesn't matter.
There you go.
Which we always look forward to. You can find us on all the social media sites, from Facebook to X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, to which we've provided links in the show notes. But you can also just Google Totally 80s and 90s Recall, and all those locations will pop up.
Also, you can check out our website at totally80s90srecall.podbean.com or email us at 80s90srecall@gmail.com We are also working on getting a voicemail line, which I haven't shared that with Rob yet, but we are working on it. So you can tell us what you think of the podcast or particular episodes, which we can possibly play on future episodes.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Future shows. We love to hear from our fans, and we look forward to recommendations of future episode ideas for the 80s, 90s recall team to cover.
Love it.
All righty. Finally, if you like the oral magic, I guess, that we made today, please take a quick moment to give us 5 stars and write us a review. It goes a long way to grow the show. Also, we do have a merchandise store you can access through the show notes or on our website, where you can find t-shirts and other cool stuff. These items will give you a chance to show off what a big fan of the show you are, whether it's feeling it in your plums or if you like, if you're like the Robsters and want to continue to remember Barb Hummel.
Barb Hummel. That is correct.
Rest in peace.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Do you have any clothing?
I have clothing.
We are going to limp through the rest of the show.
I am fully dressed. Your wife frowns upon me podcasting naked.
He so is Winnie the Pooh. Don't.
Yeah, I am. I've got the shirt on.
We're clothed from the waist up.
Winnie the Pooh. All three of us at the table? Yes. We're all Winnie the Pooh?
Yes.
All right.
Do you have any closing
could also be Donald
thoughts,
Duck
and, David?
Right. I do have closing thoughts.
All right.
Here we go, Rob. In the end, Beverly Hills Cop is a buddy movie. From Axel avenging Mikey to finding new lifelong friends on the Beverly Hills Police Department. So I'll leave you with this ponderance about friendship.
No.
Great friendship is the kind of bond where you can insult each other relentlessly and still end up grabbing dinner together. It's like a perpetual roast session with occasional breaks for heartfelt conversations. True friendship is having someone who knows all of your flaws and still chooses to hang out with you instead of running away screaming. It's those moments when you can look at each other and burst into uncontrollable laughter over something that nobody else would find funny. Finally, great friendship is about the people that stick together through thick and thin, making every moment a hilarious and heartwarming adventure. I think that's very pointed to the movie.
Yes.
And for the three of us fools sitting in this studio today.
Fools. What was the line about running away? What was it? running away screaming
it
or something?
It said, you still choose to hang out instead of running away screaming.
There you go. That's right.
That seems to sum us up perfectly.
Yes. Yeah, it does. Well done.
It does. All right. You said well done?
Well done. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this this review.
You have a lot of us today. Are you okay?
I'm okay.
You've been doing this a while now. You shouldn't have the us.
Nope.
That's I'm like tired.
Public speaking 101.
I'm tired.
Public speaking 101. No us.
So many us. That brings us to the end of our review of Beverly Hills Cop. Mm-hmm. We'd like to thank all of our listeners, whether first time or subscribers, longtime subscribers, for hanging with Dave, Kurt, and I. There it is.
Didn't point hopefully to the right people with the names.
We gave you an hour or so of some laugh and great memories. And don't forget to tune in for all new episodes of Totally 80s and 90s Recall every Tuesday.
Brilliant. That's brilliant, Rob. Way to get it done.
All right. You're supposed to
ask. You did a great job, Rob.
What is our homework
for next time, Rob?
Well, we're doing a 1990s Billboard Live episode, and I have to be completely honest, I have no idea what that means.
So basically, what's going to happen is, I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen. There's no prep for either of us. I can tell you this. It's going to be about 90s music. It's going to come from a Billboard chart, and then we're going to riff on the rest of it when the episode starts. But neither of us can do any prep for it. We just have to show up and roll. So, excited?
Get excited, Rob. It's going to be a great job.
Right-o.
Wow.
What are you saying? All right.
Is that it? You got any fancy goodbyes? I mean, you're not doing it, so. This is why I run the show, folks.
No, I want to do it.
Real time out. If it's your first time tuning in, we promise this runs a lot smoother when I'm in charge. Rob's getting about a C- today for his efforts. So go ahead, Rob. What's the next part?
Hey, Dave.
Hey.
Do you have any fancy goodbyes?
You know what? I've checked all my pockets. No fancy goodbyes.
Oh, perfect. We're limping through the
end of that. Pure gold.
I think we've had enough. We need to shut Rob down. He's much more comfortable on this side of the aisle here.
I think it was all your script. You know what?